Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 12:45 p.m. That is Pacific Standard Time, and today is December 31st. So happy New Year to one and all. And certainly, it's been a very volatile year this year. We started off with the very consistent advance that it persisted for all of 2017, continuing into the new year. Then we had a very sharp pullback in January. That set up a range that persisted for the next 8 to 9 months. Then we had a much bigger pullback. And this year has also been characterized by a very clear underperformance of emerging markets and Europe in particular. If we simply pay attention to the currency adjusted performance of the global stock market indices, we can see that Wall Street is finishing down on the year in the order of about 5 or 6%, depending on which index one looks at. But Europe is down well in excess of that, in the order of anything from 15 to 21%. The Nikkei was down almost 10%. China was down almost 30% on the mainland market, and the Hang Seng down about 13%. Australia down almost 16%. And of course, then you can also compare those performances with what we see on the left-hand column, which is the nominal appreciation. So, for example, the Brazilian market stands out because the real was so very weak in the early part of the year that it grossly flattered the nominal price appreciation of the Bovespa, while the dollar appreciation was only approximately down about 2%, in fact, for the year. But that, I think, also helps to really highlight just how strong the dollar has been this year. So, if, for example, we redenominate this into pounds, since the pound has been rather rangy this year, well, then we can see, for example, that Wall Street has been outperforming by a significant margin. In fact, if you're a pound investor, you're coming away with a gain for the year if you invest in the Nasdaq. You're also coming away with a gain if you'd invested in Brazil, but it's done nothing at all for you if you're investing in Europe or Asia. So that's pretty much what we've seen for this year. So I think everyone probably knows that already. So what can we anticipate for next year? Well, generally speaking, the investment community is going to turn a page on 2018 this evening, and they're going to start tomorrow. Well, I guess it's going to be on Wednesday with a new slate, and they're going to start looking for bargains. They're going to have to buy something, or they're going to have to remain in cash. Well, therefore, there are two big questions that I think people are going to be asking. The first is that certainly there has been a demand for cash. So, demand for 2-year yields has been improving since November. That's also because there is a very clear, I think, decision that's been made by the market that to discount the possibility that the Federal Reserve is going to raise rates at all this year, and there are also already they are already pricing in the potential for interest rate cuts in 2020. Generally speaking, when we are this late in the cycle, when people start thinking about interest rate cuts, that equates to recession risk. Well, we've seen a meaningful pullback in the yield for the 2-year since the beginning of November. And when we look at this on a weekly basis, we can see that it has just about, and in fact exceeded its, excuse me, it has unwound its overextension relative to the trend mean, and is in fact now trading below the trend mean. Now, when we look at the yield curve spread, where there has been a great deal of commentary about this over the course of the last while, well, we can see that it's still trending downwards. If we zoom in and simply look at what's been going on in terms of the daily basis, then it certainly had rallied in the last 2 weeks of December, but it was in negative territory in here today. This is the first area of potential resistance. If we simply take the labels off the chart, this is really quite a consistent downtrend. The 20 basis point level represents the lower side of the overhead trading range. It's the first area of potential resistance, and we're starting to see evidence that resistance is in fact being encountered. Well, that is really, I think, starting to also suggest that people are beginning to think that there is going to be a recession either at the end of 2019 or the beginning of 2020. So that is probably going to be one of the factors that is going to shape the way that people think about how to invest in 2019. Therefore, they're unlikely to be particularly enamored by really aggressive growth strategies, and there is likely to be a desire for yield. So I did the reweight for the autonomies fund this morning because it's the last day of the year. But what really stood out was just how clearly outperforming some of the what would be either considered autonomies, global consumer-oriented shares, or those that have got very clear records of dividend appreciation, like Dividend Aristocrats, are clearly outperforming in here. For example, when we look at McDonald's, it has found support in the region of the trend mean. Coca-Cola has done well. Pepsi is right in the region of the trend mean. But what we can see, for example, if we start comparing some of these charts, Pepsi rebounded from its lows rather impressively last week, and it was in mildly negative territory in here today. When we look at Coca-Cola, it also rebounded impressively following the Christmas break, and that confirms support in the region of the trend mean. Johnson and Johnson, which was pulling back extraordinarily volatile in a very aggressive manner and certainly heightened volatility, was also well off its low last week. Then, when we start to think about the healthcare sector, which is generally characterized by very impressive yields, then it bounced from the region of the trend mean last week as well. That's not simply the case for Merck, but it's equally the case for Pfizer, and that's also not simply a US phenomenon. But when we look at, for example, GSK in the UK, it's right in the region of the trend mean, although it has been a very volatile chart over the course of the last few years. Sanofi also bouncing from the region of the trend mean in here. If we look at, for example, Novartis in Switzerland, well, that's what we're also starting to see evidence of here, is that it's a clear commonality to the healthcare sector, but not the high growth portion of the healthcare sector, but more the established pharmaceuticals, where there is a clear vision of where cash flows are likely to be, regardless of what happens in terms of the macro environment in 2019. I think these are the kinds of shares that are likely to continue to garner interest here. And the utilities index was well off its low last week as well. So that, I think, is probably going to be one of the primary themes for 2019. It's going to be people looking for security and having a deeper respect for dividend growth and looking for some form of a hedge. Well, that's equally then the case for gold. Gold prices have bounced rather impressively over the course of the last few weeks and now trading back above the trend mean and that psychological $1,250 area. The fact that it had bounced from the region of the late 2016 lows right back here in August, well, that is at helping to confirm that this is still or it has renewed the 3-year range. Prices are now trending back up towards the upper side of that range. Well, what we also can anticipate for 2019 is that there is going to be plenty of talk about fiscal stimulus. The USA has been leading the way on this front. Then you have the UK, Italy, and France that have all adopted some form of fiscal stimulus. Certainly, Italy has caved and has not adopted a budget that would have broken the fiscal austerity limits by any real discernible margin. But that says nothing about what their eventual spending is in fact going to be. That's one of the primary problems that Europe has, is that countries and the administrations tend to say one thing and do something else, so that they are nominally inside the rules, but in fact are breaking them. That's certainly been the case in France on a number of occasions. Well, then of course we have the potential that Germany is going to have a recession, and that we had negative growth in the third quarter. It's quite likely that Germany is going to have negative growth in the fourth quarter. Two consecutive quarters of negative growth is technically a recession. Then that is going to begin to ask some very big questions about the austerity program that has been really championed by the Bundesbank. So then we have to look at China, and China has got increasing evidence of an economic slowdown. Purchasing Managers Index went into negative territory. The manufacturing productivity is going down. Consumer spending is deteriorating. People are buying fewer cars. That's all representative of an economy that's in quite a lot of trouble. And China knows that better than anybody else, that they are going to have to adopt either fiscal, monetary stimulus or both, and I personally think it's probably going to be both, in order to really start to support the economy. The entire Chinese economic miracle is predicated on growth. The only possible way that they can keep everything, all the balls in the air, is with growth. And if they start to go into a recession, then there are going to be some very significant credit issues. Well, that is another challenge for next year, because there is a wall of debt that needs to be refinanced. That isn't simply just a US phenomenon, it's a global phenomenon. We're starting to see underperformance of leveraged loans. They are less easy to monitor, because they're not as liquid a market as the bond market, and they're not as easy to chart either. So it's rather difficult to get a clear handle on what are the clear winners and losers. But the high yield market gives us a pretty good I think insight into exactly what's going on, and high yield spreads are still trending higher, and we are starting to see that US high yield is catching up with international high yield. That doesn't necessarily mean that the spreads in Europe or Asia are going to contract, but what we do know is that when high yield spreads go above 500 basis points, it generally coincides with a great deal of volatility on stock markets. So it's not really until we see those high yield spreads starting to come back down that we can really sound the all clear. Well, they're not coming back down just yet, and therefore we can't really sound the all clear just yet. So when we look at these primary Wall Street indices, they have experienced very clear, massive reactions against the prevailing trend. This is the biggest pullback we've seen since 2009. It encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean. We had a failed upside break before that. So we have seen a significant loss of uptrend consistency. There is a short covering rally underway, and but the big question is going to be whether it can push back above the trend mean. So short term, there is the potential for an additional rally. Medium term, there's a lot of work to do to really demonstrate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment, and there are significant risks in the credit markets. Credit is something we have to pay attention to at this part of the cycle, because credit leads, and that's, I think, one of the most important lessons we have to really be aware of, is that the credit markets tend to lead the equity markets, and credit is suggesting that we're going to have additional volatility. So when we look at what we can anticipate for next year, then the VIX index is coming back down at the moment, and that is supportive of the view that we're going to get a rebound in the short term. But the much bigger question is whether it is going to come back below 20. And again, that's That's a question that has not yet been answered. So when we think about what is it that we can expect, well, we can anticipate that there is going to be volatility. There's going to be people looking for a safe haven, that those safe havens are starting to exhibit relative and absolute performance, and that is likely to result in not only their performance, but it's going to attract funds into them. Well, then we also have evidence that people are looking at cash, and cash is becoming an increasingly viable asset class, not least because it does pay a yield, at least for the moment. Because if we do get a recession, well, then that is going to result in interest rates coming back down again. Well, then where are people going to go for their cash flow? Well, it's got to be in dividend producers. So that is part of the reason why the dividend aristocrat slash autonomy type companies are really exhibiting relative strength in here. Now, when we look at what's going on in Europe, well, the DAX index is short-term oversold, but it has an awful lot of work to do in order to really question that this isn't a medium-term supply dominant environment. Then when we look at the European banks, well, they are among the worst performing financials in the world, and yes, it has been trending down all year. So we're right in the region of the lows from 2012 and 2016, but we would need to see some very substantive action on the behalf of both monetary and fiscal authorities to really instill some confidence that Europe is about to turn around. And there is the possibility that they could just dispense with austerity. Now, that is going to be a big ask from a political perspective, but it is a potential answer to some of the questions that overhang the European project. And with the rise of populism, it does look like it's going to be an increasingly more attractive possibility. Well, the Nikkei had pulled back below 20,000 and has paused around this level before or at the end of last week. So now the question is whether it is going to be able to push back above it and hold it. The yen has been the best performing currency this year, and it was in positive territory again in here today. And again, that is further evidence of of demand for a safe haven. So with the yen now breaking the dollar's progression of higher reaction lows since the early part of this year, that's also evidence of continued demand for safe haven assets. So I think these are one of the these are perhaps the most important charts that we can look at, that when we have this demand for safe havens and the outperformance of highly defensive sectors, that tells us what people are doing with their money. So that then creates an even bigger hurdle for the stock markets to overcome in order to really demonstrate a return back to demand dominance. In other words, in the we're going to have to give the benefit of the doubt to the downside as long as we see the outperformance of highly defensive sectors and until we see Wall Street pushing back above its trend mean. Well, the other market that is very clearly likely to move towards fiscal stimulus is India. The populist administration of Narendra Modi, which has been very market friendly, is likely to try and buy the election next, well, in 2019. So that does suggest there's going to be fiscal stimulus, and that has been one of the causal factors behind the continued relative strength of the Indian market. Then the Indonesian market was in positive territory in here today, and it is exhibiting very clear nominal price appreciation here, having found support in the region of the trend mean. Well, what that also helps to ram home is the point that the issues that are assailing the international markets are less of an issue for ASEAN, and in fact, the Western friendly and I think more capitalist oriented ASEAN markets like India and Indonesia are likely to be some of the net beneficiaries of the issues that continue to ebb and flow between the USA and China. Now, there was positive news over the weekend that talks are ongoing and that there is some enthusiasm that there can be some points of agreement. But we are a long way from a clear and sustained ebbing in terms of geopolitical tensions, because if China has a slowing economy, then we have to ask, what is its route out of it? Well, its route out of a slowing economy is its export market. It's also moving up the value chain in terms of its manufacturing so that it can compete in more value-added products. Well, those are certainly autos and planes. And the C, I think it's the 919, is their latest prototype for a passenger plane that could compete with either Airbus's or Boeing's. And they are likely to go into mass production sometime in 2019, probably towards the end of the year. And those are extraordinarily large, big ticket items. Well, it's not. I don't think anyone is anticipating that either Europe or the US is going to be buying large numbers of those planes, but the rest of the world will, because they're going to be cheaper than either Boeing's or Airbus's. So those are going to be major points of contention in terms of the way that China is competing with what are essentially the cash cow sectors that have helped to really foment the considerable economic advantage that North America and Europe has had. So these are very large questions that are not going to be answered in the short term. And that also does suggest that we are going to see continued strife. And I think that is also part of the reason why people are willing to give some backing to markets like India and Indonesia and potentially even Vietnam. Although Vietnam has got a land border with China. But certainly the Vietnamese market is now testing an important area of potential support. So this is about where if it's going to find support, then it should be bouncing pretty soon. So I think when we take a step back and we look at what's going on, well, generally speaking, the end of the year is an all-change moment. In comment of the day today, I've talked about the best and the worst performers. Generally speaking, it's some of the worst performers can often turn into some of the best in the next year because so much bad news has already been priced in, and the investment community has got a very clear vested interest in not holding the worst performers when it comes to their annual review at the end of the year. So General Electric has been pulling back in a very violent manner, and it has just begun to give some evidence of steadying. Coty is another share that has been absolutely cratering over the course of the last few months, but again, initial signs that it is starting to find support. Then I think the other side of the equation, Google, for example, has pushed back above that $1,000 level, and that's an awfully big psychological level for the market. But of course, it needs to push back above the trend mean in order to really demonstrate a return to demand dominance. And Apple has pulled back extraordinarily violently, but it has at least found support in the region of that $150 area, and we're starting to see just initial signs of some steadying coming in here. But this is so far only a relatively similar sized rally compared to the one that we saw at the end of November. It's going to have to do a lot more than that in order to really signal that we are approaching the end of this pullback. And the only thing you could say for Apple right now is that it's a little bit oversold relative to the trend mean. And Microsoft is finishing out this year as the largest company in the world, but it is also now below its trend mean, although it is back above that psychological $100 area. This is the lower side of the overhead trading range, and this is exactly where it's going to have to demonstrate that it can hold. So that was an awfully big upside key reversal that we saw on December 26th. Microsoft has got the advantage of having a long history of increasing dividends. And among the technology sector, that is going to probably be one of the more attractive qualities for companies as we look into the new year. But certainly, it is for the bulls to prove here that Microsoft can hold the low around the $95 and then improve upon it to push back above the trend mean. Well, I really think that we're going to have a very exciting 2019. It's going to be a particularly important time to monitor the consistency of trends. It's also a time to think about when we think about our investments that are long-term in nature, to start to think about what an exit strategy might look like. Because the best time to sell is when something has been doing particularly well, and that's the time to lighten. But when we have completing top formations, then we have to be alert to that we are late in the cycle. There are definitely sectors that do very well late in the cycle. One of those is commodities, but that has not been playing out because of the weakness in China. Gold is another one of those, and it does look like it is starting to turn around here. But then there is also the dividend companies, and the highly defensive dividend companies tend to do well in the very late stages of an economic expansion, and they are now turning to outperformance. So as long as they are trending higher, they can be given the benefit of the doubt, but they are not going to lead into the top of the market. In fact, they're likely to peak well after the wider market peaks, and there is an argument that the wider market has already peaked, and that's certainly something that we have to be aware of. So I do think that the one thing that we need to put as a priority for 2019 is to have an exit strategy in place for even the things that we're in love with, because if we're seeing trend deterioration and completing top formations, well, then that is not the best time to adopt a buy and hold strategy. Whereas when we are in the early stages of a bull market where you've probably already had a big decline, people tend to be very diligent with their stops, and yet that virtually ensures they're going to get disillusioned and stopped out, because sometimes you have to tolerate bigger drawdowns after an already big decline, because of just the amount in terms of percent that things move at the bottom. Whereas people tend to be much more tolerant of the same kind of moves at the top. And that is one of the that is the res I guess that is the result of the conditioning effect of a bull market. Because when one has been holding for a long time, you've probably sat through a number of medium-term pullbacks and been rewarded for doing so. That creates the buy and hold mentality. But if you have completing top formations, if prices are have pulled back in a more violent way and they are below the trend mean and failing to push back above them, well then, and when we're late in the cycle and when highly defensive sectors are the best performing shares in the world, well, then that does tell us that we need to be alert to top formation completion, and that that does hold out the prospect that things could go down more during a recession before they start going back up again. So I do think that 2019 is going to be a year where we have to be very alert to stops, topping formations, and then also for opportunities as they arise, because increasing volatility creates wonderful buying opportunities. And I think with that, I will leave you for the year and look forward to greeting you again in 2019.